Extra time.
Hello, Football Daily, and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast, where we've got a special lineup for you today. They're annoyed with me because I've kept them waiting for about 25 minutes as I try and sort out my laptop.
25? Turns out 42.
Okay. I'll throw to you first, Zach. You in a good mood, my friend?
No. To be quite frank, no. We said 10 o'clock. I got a text from Henry saying, "Oh, can we do 20 minutes later?" We said, "Okay." 20 minutes later, he can't join a call. You know, this inept, some would say. But apart from that, no, I'm all right. Thank you very much, mate. Thank you very much.
Oh, there have been sweeping changes behind the scenes at Football Daily. We've gone into the new Sky era, and I'm struggling to keep pace. Someone who's not. James Wayne, great. Very rare treat for me to spend some time with you on screen. How are you?
Yeah, very rare treat. I'm all right. I'm kind of slowly getting worried about the lack of technical ability from our employees and teammates. Henry, unfortunately, is joining that list. But no, I'm good.
Rough list as well. Deegi and McCubbin, mate. So.
Yeah, it's rough.
I mean, between me, Deegi and McCubbin, you've picked out the three oldest men at the company, I would say. In terms, not in like an age sense, in just a very kind of
technologically advanced.
Yeah.
Old souls.
And you'll see that on the next episode of Continental Club. We're in a very old school pub. I mean, God.
Good thing I'm dealing with the cameras.
Are you actually?
Back to the wall.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if we're left to do the cameras, who knows what that episode is going to look like. But yeah, I mean, it'd be great to get off Zoom. Anyway, listen, not here to discuss me, Doogie, and McCubbin, as great as a podcast as that would be. This week, we're looking at some of the crazy managerial news going around the world of football at the moment, in particular in the Premier League. And I think we're going to kick off with this Unai Emery story because it is pretty wild. I mean, yesterday for British media to be reporting that Newcastle United had settled on him as their boss, it all looked like set in stone. Then obviously Emery is denying it in the press, and then they had to play Young Boys in the Champions League last night because he's obviously the manager of Villarreal still. And it turns out this morning he's had a complete change of heart, decided he doesn't fancy joining Newcastle. I mean, what a shock. After all, Zach.
Yes.
First up, when you saw that he was seriously considering taking that role, how did you feel? Because I personally did not feel good about it at all.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I think for Newcastle, it's unreal. I think it's really, really good getting a manager in of the stature of Unai Emery. But from Unai Emery's point of view, I think it would have been a major step back. There's so many risks at the moment with this Newcastle job. No one knows whether they're going to even stay up this season, whether they'll be in the Premier League next year, whether they can try and build on having all this money behind them. And so if they went and got Unai Emery and he didn't manage to keep them up and they went down to the Championship, Unai Emery managing in the Championship is just something that I could never have thought of in a million years.
Yeah.
Which is really weird. But again, like from a Newcastle point of view, it would be an unreal sight, hiring and appointment. But I think Unai Emery is he's the manager after whoever they get first. Like they need to get a manager who has dealt with the kind of relegation battle and trying to keep them up. Like maybe not to the level of what they had with Steve Bruce, a kind of better manager in that front. I've also seen names like Eddie Howe and those guys kind of be mentioned. Oh. I think that's probably the first step is getting someone like that, not for taking you into the new era, but to at least keep you up and get you ready for another season of Premier League football when you can kind of battle and, you know, use your war chest to try and bring in players. However, that being said, it's not easy because if they're going to spend so much money in the summer coming, not many managers are going to be happy to just spend 6 months at the club until they go and then get the new guy in after 6 months' time or so. Then no one's really going to be too willing to be the interim manager. Though I say that, they could just pay them a lot of money and I'm pretty sure a lot of people would be okay with it. But overall, yeah, like from Newcastle point of view, Unai Emery, unbelievable. From Unai Emery's point of view, to go from a Champions League club where you're doing pretty well, where you've just won the Europa League, to then dropping down to Newcastle is one of the biggest fall-offs I probably would have ever seen a manager do within one movement of a job.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, James, if we look at what... So Guillaume Balague was on Twitter this morning saying that apparently Emery, he He felt unnecessary huge pressure on match day and not a clear vision from the club. This is part of his rejection. And he, apparently his friends and his family told him to stay at Villarreal, the club saying that they were building around him. I mean, yeah, Newcastle have got 4 points at the moment. It would have been... It's not just like a click of your fingers, Emre in, they're staying up, is it? Like, that job would have been huge to try and take on Newcastle.
It's, I mean, at least Emery's got good friends and family around him to kind of keep him away from the club. It's, they need stability first and foremost. Like, Newcastle need to stay in the Premier League before they can think about pushing on. And we've seen in the past Champions League to Championship move with Nuno when he went to Wolves. And that did work, but obviously we've seen him get the chop at Tottenham recently. But, you know, he did manage to get them up and get them stability within the Premier League. But Newcastle don't want that. And I think, I know it sounds a bit... this might be a ludicrous shout, but for me, it makes sense. What you need is Premier League stability, and you need to get yourself out of an absolutely awful situation. And as Brexit and as awful as it sounds, I actually think a Sam Allardyce, somebody who's willing to take the fall, because you need somebody who
Happily be paid off. He will happily get paid loads of money and do it for six months.
He will happily stay there until the next manager comes in. He will, you know, he can stay there for a short amount of time. And he could be the full guy that they need. As much as I, you know, don't really want Sam Allardyce back in the Premier League, does make sense to me. But I'm very glad Unai's not going for this because, yeah, he's building something very special. Or he's already built something very special at Villarreal, winning their first ever trophy. I mean, the Europa League as well is not... Well, the first ever major trophy, I should say. But and it, for it to be the Europa League is just incredible. Yeah, I just don't want it to happen. I really don't want it to happen.
Yeah, he's not just won the Europa League. I mean, great point about Nuno, but Emery is far more successful than Nuno.
100%.
I mean, he's won so much with Sevilla, Valencia, even at PSG. It would have been wild. But Sam Allardyce, the Premier League, James Wayne, you heard it here first.
I know. I'm sorry, everyone.
Zach, it's all well and good saying Newcastle needs stability and to stay up. I've put in their starting lineup against Chelsea in their sort of recent 3-0 defeat where they look pretty hapless, let's be real. That back line is semi-impossible. I don't see how they can stay up to an extent. I really struggle to see whether... If you consider that even Burnley have got someone like Maxwell Cornet who's come in and lit up that side, is capable of scoring outrageous finishes. I'm not saying St. Maximin can't do that, but Burnley have a much more solid base by which to work off from Nick Pope and Tarkowski. Norwich, they're, as far as I'm concerned, they're gone. But do you really look at that Newcastle squad and think someone, a quality manager, could come in and really change that around? Because I struggle to see where sort of how they stop conceding goals at this current rate.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I actually thought for 60 minutes Newcastle defended pretty well. It took an unreal touch from Reece James and good management from Tuchel to kind of get Chelsea firing, and then even from there, it was kind of a nice finish for the second one and a penalty for the third. So I didn't necessarily think they were awful, all things considering, especially playing top of the league. And I think you're right as well. I think with players like Alan Saint-Maximin, they have players that can maybe do that side of it for them. The issue, you're right, is just kind of, it feels very much that they are going into games wanting 1 point rather than maybe trying to go for all three. That also being said, they have faced some tough teams. Like, their next couple of games are pretty good for them. They're about to play Brighton, Brentford, Arsenal. Obviously, I probably expect them to lose that one, but Norwich and Burnley. So if they can kind of go into those games and maybe try and take some results, obviously more so against Norwich and Burnley, if they can get 6 points out of those and maybe pick up a draw or two from the other three, I think that'd be unreal from them. The other question is just what's happening. Like, the players must find it so difficult at the moment because they're playing under, his name escapes me, the interim manager at the moment, but Graham Jones. Yes, they're playing under Graham Jones, and he obviously is just at the moment trying to build a stopgap. That's why he's playing five at the back and very much kind of leaving it to Alan Saint-Maximin and Ryan Fraser to essentially run down the wings and create for Callum Wilson. The players at the moment must find it so difficult in trying to be like, what are we doing here? Like, these aren't necessary tactics. It's basically just defend and give it to our best player and hope for the best. At times that has worked for them. At times it worked for them last season. But it's still very much kind of the Steve Bruce tactics. And if that's what they're trying to get away from, then they do need to appoint a new manager pretty soon and quite quickly, especially with the January transfer window coming up and them now having these funds to try and help them stay in the Premier League. But you don't want to spend those funds if it's Graham Jones in charge, because the players that he bring in might not fit the new philosophy they're going to try and go with for whoever comes in as manager. It must be really weird as a Newcastle fan right now, obviously having such like huge like happiness from the takeover, but also then watching your team week in week out be absolutely dog shit, and looking like they're going to get relegated, and then also just not knowing anything. Like, the Unai Emery like talks are so good, but they're always going to be far fetched. Realistically, like, Unai Emery joining Newcastle would have blown my mind. And so they need to sort out this management scenario, and whether that is Frank Lampard or whether that is Eddie Howe, or like, at this point, I really just think it's get someone that's going to keep you up, if you pay them as much as they want, and then if you get to the summer and you think you can go and buy so many different players to keep you, you know, to try and get you to the next level, maybe a bit how Wolves and Leeds are this season, mid-table, battle for mid-table, and then, you know, go on from that season onwards, then do it then. But right now, you can sack the manager then, pay him off and get someone else in. But right now, you need to secure to Premier League football. You can't go down to the Championship. I just think there's just no one knows what's happening at Newcastle, to be quite honest.
You mentioned Eddie Howe. Apparently, he was their kind of second... He was the runner-up to Unai Emery and whatever talks were held over the weekend. James, do you see Eddie Howe as someone that could keep this Newcastle side up? I know you want Big Sam to come in and you know...
I definitely don't want him to come in.
Eddie Howe for me isn't the kind of manager just to knuckle down a tight defence and keep you up. He's someone that... No. And when you start trying to transition to a more progressive style of football, that's when you get him in. He's very good at sort of getting the best out. To be fair to him, he is good at getting the best out of players who perhaps weren't typically thought of at a certain level. We obviously saw him take a Bournemouth squad, which he was very loyal to, a very long way.
With Ryan Fraser.
We're from
Callum Wilson, right?
Maybe I am wrong. But yeah, I mean, is Eddie Howe really... Do you think he'd be tempted by this Newcastle job, or do you think this is, considering how long he's waited, we obviously saw him linked with the Celtic job for a bit, do you think this is really the job for him to return to?
It's difficult, because if Newcastle approach him in the way, or you know, he could do this, they could do this with a lot of managers, approach it in the way of, okay, let's just kind of concede that going down is a huge possibility this season. We'll bring you in as a project manager. We'll go down, we'll give you what you need, Championship, when you come back, we'll give you what you need to stay in the Premier League. But this season's kind of a write-off. You start to bed in what you want, then it could make sense. But I think it's just a poison chalice, this job at the moment. It really is. Because there's not really much you can do in this situation. Like, right now until January, there is nothing really you can do to stop the rot. There are some good players within the squad, but there's a lot of dross, and you can't sort, it has to be a good two years to sort, you know, the squad out, let alone kind of getting some kind of tactics and a style of play in. But for Eddie Howe, maybe you know, it could work, I'll say that, it could work, because if they approach him, as I said, project manager, you can go down, you can come back up, we'll be there for you, we'll back you, because we know where you can take us. But if they're willing to do that, I don't think Eddie Howe is, you know, well, they could convince Eddie Howe there, but there's a lot of other managers they should approach first. Like, there's a lot of top quality managers that are still kind of available. You've got like Lucien Favre, quite a lot of people from Barcelona, like Valverde, Setien. Obviously they wouldn't come to Newcastle. They wouldn't. They realistically, none of them would. I'd be surprised if Eddie Howe would. But if they could approach him in that way, they should go that way.
Honestly, I think Eddie Howe's
been out for a while.
But this is what I mean. I think Eddie Howe's stock is at an all-time low. Like, there was a period where Eddie Howe was being linked to the Arsenal Celtic job and all this kind of stuff and like a really like next level for him to go on from Bournemouth and kind of take that next step. And he didn't do it. And or maybe the opportunity never actually came and never, you know, was fulfilled. And then he got relegated with Bournemouth and then he left and he's out of the job. And since then, he didn't move on quick enough to try and keep himself still, not relevant, but in people's minds and kind of looking at that, okay, he's still a good manager and stuff like this. He's been out, I don't know the exact time, but it feels like over a year now, at least. And for a manager, I think if you're out for over a year, you need to have some very good stock behind you before you leave. Like, and I'm not comparing to Pep Guardiola, but for instance, when Pep Guardiola was out for a year, he'd just had time with Bayern Munich, right? He'd just won the treble or something with them. He'd been ridiculous for them. Others that I'm trying to think of another manager that was out for. Allegri, bless him. Somehow his stock didn't really fall. He left Juventus, was out for a bit, and then went back to Juventus after a couple of years. But for Eddie Howe, his stock, I think personally, is at an all time low. And I actually think for a job like Newcastle would be brilliant for him to try and get that stock back up. And also a guy that, you know, Newcastle may be happy to kind of take them through to the next stage of trying to become a mid table side.
He definitely would go down to the Championship happily. I will say that, because I mean, he's been there, he's done it, he's been lower than that, so it's not like he realistically going to the Championship and playing a season or two there is an embarrassment. Like, he's a good manager, but he hasn't proven himself to be a Champions League manager yet, so
no, definitely not.
yeah it does make sense.
All right, well, I'll be really intrigued to see if Unai Emery says no. I was seeing that Keith Downey of like Sky Sports this morning was still claiming that Newcastle are confident they can get this over the line, but it'll be intriguing to see if they do turn.
It took them 3 years to get the takeover over the line, and they were confident 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it was all rushed through a little bit because sort of Mike Ashley suddenly decided to sort of hit the green light on the move, but it is slightly 15 days after letting Bruce go, so they still have that vacancy there.
I think Doogie made a really good point on Twitter, where he was like, for 3 years, like these guys have been trying to buy Newcastle, and it seems like they've had no plan. Like, they've made no plan over these 3 years on who the manager targets they want to try and get in, the players that they may want to try and get in.
Yeah, true.
This time, like, they've had so long to think about what they want to do with Newcastle when they take over. And maybe it came quicker than they actually expected. Maybe, because very much after that, I mean, we don't want to get too into it, and that's a whole different podcast. But very much maybe when the green light happened, it just went so quickly, and maybe quicker than they expected. But it feels like they've come in here with absolutely no idea what they want to do, who to replace. And essentially, personally, it feels like they just got rid of Steve Bruce because everyone was saying that's the next thing for them to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the popular move. All right. Well, yeah. I think it's a nice transition from one poorly run club into another poorly run club. certainly on the managerial front. We're going to go to Spurs now, who seem to have really dug themselves out of a hole with one of the most outrageous managerial appointments I can remember in recent times. Genuinely baffles me how many good managers we now have in the Premier League. Because obviously Antonio Conte has given in to Paratici and Daniel Levy's dual charm offensive and has accepted the Tottenham job. I mean, Zach, how, as a big Chelsea man, as someone who it's already sort of like pretty hard to get to the top four, does this make you nervous? Are you quite nervous about this one?
It doesn't make me nervous as a Chelsea. I think Chelsea will get top four. Like, I think we've seen enough this season to kind of confidently say that. I don't want to sound too cocky. Of course, anything can happen. But I mean, if I was Leicester, if I was you know, Arsenal, maybe if I was West Ham, like, I'd then be very like, I'd be quite annoyed. It'd be very, very frustrating to see Spurs kind of go through get it so wrong and feel like, sweet, that fourth spot has opened up. And Manchester United as well, I should say, sorry. I'd be very, very annoyed, yeah, to see them going higher. Essentially, the one of the best five managers in the world, Antonio Conte. Like, he's so good. And annoyingly, personally, he's probably going to be really, really good with this Spurs squad. Like, he's got so many assets here that he would have loved. He's spoken before about how much he loves Harry Kane and thinks he's the best striker in the world, and how he can do everything that he wants him to do, works hard for him. And I mean, God, Kane must be laughing. Honestly, he got convinced to stay and was like under this Nuno project, and you could just tell it wasn't working for him. And now he must be so happy to see that they've got Antonio Conte now in this dugout, and a manager that he probably will feel is the level of manager that he wants to be working under, one of the best in the world, who's gone there and won titles everywhere he's been, as recently as last season. And so he must be honestly like laughing his head off and being so in. When he saw the news that Antonio Conte is accepted, honestly, he must have been over the moon. He couldn't have been happier. Because obviously, I don't think he probably would have, sure, preferred to work under Pep, but Antonio Conte is a good close second to be
way better than
with.
Nuno.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I said on Winners and Losers, like, I did feel sorry for Nuno and all that kind of stuff, but like, as a Spurs fan, like, to bring in Antonio Conte, like, it couldn't have been better for them, especially after all the news about Manchester United and you know, all that stuff about them going to be the El Saco, whatever it was called, and a lot of links to for Conte to go to United and how it would be so good for Manchester United. And he probably would have maybe won them a Premier League possibly in his time there. To then go to Spurs and such a switch around is unreal. And as I said, like, I think the assets he's got at Spurs can suit the system that he wants to play fantastically. I think it's an unbelievable signing and such a mess. Like, the whole managerial saga that has been Spurs for the last, like, 5 months, and how much of a mess it's been, through going through 8 or 9 candidates to having Fonseca reject you, Conte be annoyed because he's still emotionally with Inter Milan or just not being paid enough at Spurs at that time, to then, yeah, go for this guy and to now get Conte. Like, it's worked out the best way it could have possibly worked out for them, to be quite honest.
Yeah, 100%.
I do feel bad. Almost 500,000 people watched our video on how Conte would fix Man United. But never fear.
Don't worry, we'll do how we'll fix Spurs.
Well, I mean, speaking on that, what I'm fascinated to see is his relationship with the ownership when it comes to getting the players that he wants in.
Yes.
There is that great quote, like he said at Juventus, they want me to dine in a 100 euro restaurant with 10 euros in my pocket or something like that. They're basically saying that, like, they don't give him enough money to do anything. Spurs, I'm not convinced, are going to be the same. Apparently, I was reading The Guardian yesterday, apparently Daniel Levy said he'll back him for the right player, but that sales will still make up a part of their budget. James, I've put down a few of their rumoured targets, starting with the man in every transfer talk every week at the moment, Dusan Vlahovic. Of any of the names on this list, can you actually see Conte being given any of these players? Because A, you've got to convince them to come to Spurs, which with him at the helm, don't get me wrong, is a much easier proposition.
Yes.
But it's, I mean, to be fair, they're only 5 points behind City and West Ham and sort of the top four positions at the moment. So they're really not that far off quickly getting back into Champions League contention. But can you see Spurs really going out this winter and sort of doing a madness in the winter window to bring in some of these players?
I think it's with Conte. He brings in some players that you just don't expect, and he gets the best out of players you just don't expect. Like, you know, when I think about kind of his Inter Milan team and his Chelsea team, it's like Victor Moses was insane for you guys. Obviously, Marcus Alonso's playing very well again because he's a wing back, but he got the best out of Marcus Alonso there. Ashley Young, Inter. And it was Victor Moses again, didn't he?
He took him to Inter Milan for a bit.
Yeah. But he gets the best out of players you just wouldn't expect. So with these kind of rumoured targets, Vlahovic, I don't really see. They've got Kane, they've got Son. Their attack is, they don't need to improve their attack. Unless Conte's being fussy in who he exactly wants.
He is a fussy boy.
Well, he's already said, as you said, he said that Kane's got everything that he needs. Yeah, yeah. So I don't really see him going for any attacking players. Stefan de Vrij, you've put on this list. I think he'd be a great signing. I think Tottenham's centre-backs have declined over the past few years. I mean, they had a really, really solid base under Pochettino.
Romero's good. I will say
he is good, but I mean the second centre back spot.
Eric
is,
Dier
is,
still. Yeah, like,
and when you kind of when I think about Tottenham centre backs, it was a kind of Vertonghen and Alderweireld combo that I thought was extremely good. Obviously they've both left now and declined before that, but yeah, Stefan de Vrij and I've forgotten his name now. You just said it, Christian Romero, isn't it? Yeah. Would be a great, you know, pairing, and I can, you know, obviously Conte prides himself on his defence, so yeah, I could easily see that. But the thing is, yeah, you can't expect Conte to sign, let's say, normal players, because he will get the best out of players you don't expect. So he'll find, I don't know, Emerson Royale and make him into a superstar.
Oh man, Højbjerg is going to be unreal under him.
He's already so, as well. Yeah, it's a bit of a wild one when Conte comes to a club, because you don't, you know, if he's got certain things in place, like a striker, then, when he was at Inter, he was like, right, I need Lukaku. He wanted Lukaku at Chelsea. He finally got him at Inter. He doesn't need that. He doesn't need anything attacking, really, when you look at Tottenham's side. You've got, like, Bergwijn just chilling, not really doing much. There's so much depth already in that squad. But, yeah, defensive players, I can definitely see him grabbing a good few.
Oh, I love... You know what? If Conte doesn't like a player, it's for a good reason. Do you know what I mean? I feel like people respect his decision if he... Well, I heard him say he'd rather kill a lazy player than have him in his side or something like that. Yeah, I mean, this could be... For players like Dele Alli, who are really struggling, this could be this could be the moment it makes or breaks his kind of career at a top six Premier League side. Because if Conte turns around and says no, then there's no way back for him in that Spurs side, in my opinion.
I agree, mate. And the thing is, it's like his fourth chance now in a row. Like every time he's fallen out of the side, the manager gets sacked, and he gets a new love. He gets a new manager that loves him for a little bit. And I think this will be his last chance. I think if there's going to be one manager that is going to get Dele Alli to work hard, and actually, there are periods where I thought he did work hard during Nuno's spell as well. I particularly think the Chelsea game. I remember him. You know, really putting in a shift. I don't necessarily think he was effective, but you know, the guy's tracking back all the way. I saw him putting in last challenges and last blocks for his side. So I think he has that ability. But if there's one manager that's going to essentially give Dele Alli his final test at Spurs, it's going to be Antonio Conte. And like, as much as you know that I'm a Chelsea fan and they're Spurs, like, I really, really like Dele Alli. I always have liked him, and I think it's so sad to see his decline and how it's happened. I think Dele's got a huge chance here, and it's definitely his last chance. Like, I don't think Spurs can give him any more chances. Like, right now they've given him the best manager he'll probably work under again for the rest of his career in Antonio Conte. And if he proves him right, like, he can be so vital to this Spurs side and play in kind of a four in that kind of in a front three, essentially, with Son and Harry Kane. Like, that's how I personally think they'll line up, with maybe a two up top and Kane and Son being those strikers. Dele Alli's got a huge chance here, and the same with Ndombele. I think it's kind of rough as well for him. Like, he finally got back on the good side of Nuno and started playing and playing decently well as well. And then he's gone back out, and he's going to have to work hard. And we know that at times there's been stories coming out of Spurs that during the training he wasn't working hard, but he'll have to with Antonio Conte. So I think it's going to, there are a few players there that are going to have an interesting time. I'll be very, very interested to see how Skip's going to be used there. Yeah. I mean, Conte isn't necessarily known for favouring, you know, giving young players a chance, and that seemed to be what Nuno kind of liked in Skip. He was happy to give him minutes with Højbjerg in midfield. Whether that happens, I'm not too sure. So there are a few players who might be looking at this thinking, you know, brilliant. And then there's players like Skip that might be thinking, oh God, like, I might have to go on loan again in January, to be quite honest. But I mean, overall, like, it's a great thing for Spurs to get him in. I think finally, they've gotten a manager for now. Like, so many of their players are in their prime now, and they need to, you know, they need to be used at the very best now, and not being getting a manager in who's going to build a project like they kind of maybe possibly did with Nuno. And I mean, they attempted it as well with Jose, it has to be said. It didn't work out quite as well, but I also think Jose isn't the same manager he used to be a few years ago. But with Conte, they have got in a manager who is in his prime and knows how to play brilliant league football. Don't know about domestic, European, but I mean, he's in the Conference League. Realistically, he should be fine. But in the Premier League, he can make a really formidable side that are hard to play against and really, 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 really strong. And he's got the best. He's got some unbelievable assets to do that with. And so, yeah, I think he's got a really, really good chance at making Spurs very, very strong. I don't think they're going to win the league now or next season with him, but they're definitely going to be fighting for that Champions League place, and maybe next season even fighting near the very top. But that's my piece on Conte.
I can see him taking one look at the Conference League and being like, no, we're not.
Skip.
Send his assistant out.
There's your minutes, Skip, mate. That's your minutes there in the Conference League. You enjoy them. You take them.
I agree. I worry for people like Harry Winks as well. But I mean, Conte's
my God.
Yeah, if you look at his record is just nuts. I've put down his win percentage, 67% at Juve, 56% for what was considered a fairly poor Italian team, 65% at Chelsea. I think that's the second highest, isn't it? Something like that in Premier League history. And then 62% at Inter. Exciting times for Spurs fans, whether you like it or not. All right, we're just going to move on to another couple of stories here, because Paulo Fonseca, I don't know who his agent is or what how he's managed to like drip feed his name into every single story so far. He's like the only single guy at a wedding. It's actually getting embarrassing.
He's the only average manager available at the moment. They're either awful or they're
like
unreal.
He's the only wingy of managers.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you said Ernesto Valverde. I don't know why his name's not being bounced around.
There's so many good managers available. I checked on a list beforehand. Obviously, Koeman's just been sacked. Well, obviously, he's not good. The best of managers, but I mean, he's okay. Yeah, pretty much anyone who's managed Barcelona over the last 4 years is still lingering about somewhere.
Yeah, just waiting in a retirement home somewhere. All right, well, listen, Dean Smith, poor old Dean Smith from Aston Villa, sort of Brummy through and through. It looks his name is currently below Daniel Farke on the betting odds as the person most likely to get fired next. We're not going to discuss Daniel Farke. I think Norwich are going to. I read this great article in The Eye the other day, which described Norwich as stuck in purgatory between
too good for the Championship. Yeah.
Exactly, and they're just stuck in this horrible cycle. And it was kind of funny. It did make me think. That was a good article. I recommend people checking out. But yeah, Dean Smith, he's actually done a great job establishing Aston Villa in the Premier League. Obviously, it's not looking great at the moment. I think four losses on the bounce. They're really struggling for goals. Danny Ings, 1-7 at the moment. Leon Bailey's only hardly playing. Bear in mind, they spent 90 million on him, plus Buendia, who's only got one goal and assist from almost 500 minutes of football. James, do you feel sorry for Dean Smith, or do you think he's genuinely, if their form doesn't pick up soon, he could be in serious trouble?
Knowing the way the Premier League works, his job is probably under scrutiny a little bit, and he is at risk of being fired. But I think it's a little bit unfair. I know Aston Villa have spent, you know, even before this, have spent a lot more than people realise. So to be where he was last season is slightly, you know, kind of the actual achievement was slightly underdone by the fact that they have spent so much in the past. But saying that, he has got them obviously into the Premier League, got them to a League Cup final last season. He's done a lot for the club. He's got them to kind of, he's over it, like where they expected to be at this stage. I think he's got them, you know, just above there. So you've got to give him some license to a few bad games, a few bad seasons. Obviously, he's lost his, you know, the captain of the club, the star man. So he's got to adjust slightly. I mean, it's not the best of seasons, but we've seen enough from like he hasn't played Bailly that much, but we've seen very good things from him. So it is a bit confusing why he isn't starting him, or at least giving him more game time.
He's been injured a little bit.
He has been injured, but it's like when he has played, he's been fantastic. Yeah. So there is things to look forward to within the side. Buendia's been a bit of a disappointment. I think we all expected a bit more from him. But yeah, same with Danny Ings, really. So it's one of them ones where if the players like Danny Ings and Buendia and Leon Bailly play like we expect them to, and it's not like Dean Smith is a manager who can't get the best out of them or can't get decent performances out of them, then they should be fine. So personally, I don't feel there's any need to sack Dean Smith. I think we should he should be given... I don't really know the Aston Villa fans' opinion on this, but if it is coming from them, I think they need to kind of sit back and realise really what he's done for the club and the fact that there's not really that much of an issue right now. There could be, obviously. I mean, things do change very quickly in the Premier League. You can see yourself in the relegation zones in no time at all. But I don't see Dean Smith being that kind of manager who will let things slip. And at this stage, yeah, it's a bit ridiculous in my eyes to talk about Dean Smith getting sacked.
Yeah, I think a lot of people sort of pinned all of their success on Grealish. And don't get me wrong, he was incredible. But I remember that first season there back in the Premier League, before the Premier League got put on hold, because of everything that happened, their defence was shocking. But actually, it was Dean Smith along with John Terry who went away and figured out a way to fix their defence. And really, the backbone of the reason they stayed up that season was the fact that they managed to go watertight. And that shows a good level of manager there. Obviously, he's lost John Terry. I think that's a big loss to his back staff as well. But I mean, Zach, how do you feel about that? Do you think their success was rooted in Grealish, or do you think perhaps he's just being overlooked? Because it's an incredibly tough league at that part of the table at the moment.
Yeah. No, I think simple answer is yes. Like, one of my mates is a Villa fan, and he said recently it's not been a great watch. Some of their games, particularly was it Watford? No. There was a game recently, I can't remember exactly what it was, where they lost, and I remember him telling me like it was really, really bad. And I think it's tough, because I really liked Aston Villa's business. I thought they were quite smart. They were never going to be able to attract a player who could replicate what Jack Grealish did, where everything goes through him. Mm. Every single one of their attacks in some way, shape or form comes from him either creating it or finishing it off, as it did last season. And a guy who's essentially going supernova for them for Villa. And so I thought they were pretty smart in, okay, look, we can't buy one player to replace that, so let's hedge our bets and buy several players. Danny Ings, I thought, was a really smart move. So far, sadly, it's not quite worked out, but I backed Danny Ings to kind of pick it up. Bailly, I thought, was really, really smart. And he can only get better. He's a fantastic, fantastic player for them. And Buendia, I think we all agree, is a really good signing as well. And so along with Ollie Watkins as well, I thought they had a front kind of four, where they played 4-4-2, whatever it may be, that can be really, really effective. But also, it takes a while for them. It will take time. It's going to take time for that to kind of... for them to mesh and for that to work, like, because you're completely changing your system. Instead of being a team that is going directly through one player to create and score goals, you are now going into several ways and to not just on that left wing where Jack Grealish was playing. You are now also creating on the right. You're now, you know, you're going through different players to create opportunities, and it is a very different kind of system to what they were playing last season. Again, though, they have been rubbish defensively. To drop your club captain in Tyrone Mings and a guy that goes to England for you is a big statement on how you think he's been playing this season and how you think you defensively have been this season. Matty Cash has been brilliant going forward, but not so good defensively. Target, the same. I think, is it House? I actually quite like House, and obviously we've applauded Konsa brilliantly as well. I also think Martinez hasn't been the level he was last season. I think the game that they played against... Was it Everton? No. Who did they play this weekend? They lost for West Ham. I thought for the first two goals in that, Martinez should be doing much, much better. And for a goalkeeper of his standard, I think should be doing much better. So I think there's a few levels here of, okay, maybe the tactics aren't quite right and a lot of people are still learning how to play together. But also, I think a few players who were really, really good last season have dropped off this year, and they need to kind of at least get back to being half decent. And maybe that has been an effect of John Terry leaving. But I don't feel like John Terry would have been doing everything. Like, John Terry was the only staff guy to leave, so they've still got everyone else. Unless it was something like the NFL where Dean Smith was coaching the attack and John Terry was taking the defense every week, and it's something like that, then that would be mental in my head. Plaudits, it gives a lot of credit to John Terry at the moment, but that way the team that he ends up managing would not be conceding any goals.
You'll get abused in the comments if you say John Terry was the reason that
I'm definitely not.
I genuinely think Tyrone Mings is overrated. I really do. I'm not surprised he's been dropped. I think it's remarkable that he's been in that England setup for as long as he has. Great, good man to have at the back, but I'm not too sure. But yeah, I agree with the general sentiment. I think that he probably does deserve, Dean Smith does deserve sort of another chance to keep going with the side and see if he can get that striker, that front line just ticking a little bit. Because I just had a look at Danny Ings' numbers. He's on his expected goals is 2 compared to 3, because obviously he scored that bicycle kick, didn't he? So yeah, it shows he's not really being given the service necessary. Buendia's creative numbers are really far down at the moment. There's a lot relying so much on John McGinn in the midfield at the moment.
Has been unreal as well this season.
Quality player, John McGinn. So let's just see if they can get that ticking. I can see them going on a run sometime soon. Just quickly, the next name, and I think this is outrageous that he's being tipped for the sack already. Rafa Benitez over at Everton. I think he's been soured by the fact he had such a good start to his life there with so little expectations, having signed Andros Townsend and Damari Gray. I mean, James, obviously it's not great. They've only won one of their last 7, lost to QPR in the League Cup. But, I mean, they're still 10th in the Premier League. I'm not quite sure where people are imagining Everton to be. They live in a slightly bit of a dream world from time to time.
Yeah, I think coming from Ancelotti, though, they were living on a high with Ancelotti, really, because he was getting the best out of Calvert-Lewin and they were playing kind of decent, fun football and they were doing well. And then Rafa's come in and, yeah, as you said, he started well, but, I mean, the Watford loss was a bit of a shock, really. It's one of them ones where you think, okay, the heads, they haven't won two before that. I think it was like United they drew, yeah, I've got it here. So United they drew and then West Ham they lost. But the Watford one, like, it might be a case of they once their heads are down, and they need somebody to kind of bring them back up, and maybe they don't have that kind of captain on the field, that player or at least manager to kind of bring them back into a game, because it's snowballing a little bit and it's getting a little bit worrying. It's hard for Rafa because Calvert-Lewin's out. I mean, he's on bloody Monday Night Football these days. Your best player, your star player from last season, the guy who gave the most entertainment, kept the fans happy, is out. So it's obviously going to be more difficult. It's a little bit premature to, once again, like Dean Smith, to be calling for his head. I think it's a bit silly, really. Yeah.
I mean, Zach, they're not exactly thrilling. 40% possession. Big like aerial duel wins. I was reading they're really struggling to defend set pieces at the moment, which is actually where Ancelotti had sort of managed to fix them. Have you been that disappointed with Rafa's Everton recent weeks?
First half against oh my god, I just forget who everyone keeps playing this week. Who did they play against this on Monday?
It was Wolves.
Wolves, yeah. First half against Wolves, they were dire. They were really, really bad. And then he changed it tactically for the second half. And they were much, much better. And obviously they were probably a little bit they probably deserved to lose. But if they got a point from it, you wouldn't have been also too shocked either, especially from that second half. I think half the issue for them is the drop-off from Calvert-Lewin to the next guy who kind of plays for them, which is Rondon. is awful. Huge. That's one of the worst kind of... I mean, the signing of Rondon in the summer in general was a terrible bit of business, but they needed a backup striker anyway.
No.
Love Solomon.
He's awful. He's awful.
He's not.
He's awful. But especially to the level of Calvert-Lewin. Like, Calvert-Lewin should be playing in the Champions League. He really
he was on the up.
An elite striker now. He plays fantastically. Like he aimed, like he was saying on Monday Night Football, his aim nowadays is to be breaking to the 20 goal mark in the Premier League. And if you're doing that, you are a Champions League striker. You're an elite level. At that point, I think, you know, others have done it as well when it's maybe more of one season wonders. I think Calvert-Lewin is so integral to the way they side and what they try to do with, to the way they play. Sorry, and what they try to do with Rondon is sign a Calvert-Lewin kind of like-for-like player, and Rondon just isn't the same level as Calvert-Lewin with the way he plays, and he is so dominant in that, you know, not just in the air as well, which is really one of his best assets, but he has improved so much as well with the ball on the ground too. And so obviously missing him has been a huge knock, And I think you got to maybe give Rafa time for, you know, Calvert-Lewin to get back into the side. It's not, I don't think it's too far away now. And then see what happens. If they're still losing with Calvert-Lewin back in that side, I think looking elsewhere is not necessarily the worst option in the world. But I think Rafa Benitez is a fantastic manager. So I think sticking with him, I would back Rafa Benitez to sort out the issue that is maybe evident at the moment. And like realistically, if you sack Rafa, like, is the replacement you're getting better than Rafa Benitez? Probably not. Like, I can't really see a manager out there who's going to be doing better with the side, given the business in the summer. You know, for once they decided not to spend £80 million during a summer and instead, you know, just spend a little bit. I'd find it hard for their replace to see who their replacement would be really, and then be better than Rafa Benitez.
I'm just looking at the fixtures. And they've had an easy, very, well, apart from United, they've had a very easy run so far. And
they've got some tough games coming up.
They've got very tough games coming up. We've got Tottenham next, City after that, Brentford, Liverpool, Arsenal, Crystal Palace and Chelsea. So it's the next kind of up to Christmas, really, that's going to see whether he can maintain. Because if he's, I'm just thinking about it now, if he's losing and losing in the manner that he is to teams like Wolves and Watford and, you know, West Ham. Okay, West Ham are playing very well at the moment, but losing to these kind of teams, and fair enough, they got a draw against United, but it was only a draw. I've actually quite fear for Rafa because,
certainly.
Yeah, I mean, this could be a make or break time, really, because if you can get results against any of these teams, then it completely flips the situation, you know, puts them back right in the fold for, well, doesn't put them really in the fold for European football, but I mean, at least keeps his job safe for a little bit. But yeah, I can see it getting really rough, really rough.
All right, well, watch this space, perhaps. Actually, just a quick shout out to Bruno Lage. He's done so well since going into Wolves. And I had zero expectations for him. But mark my words, Rondon is coming good this season. It's going to happen.
Here we go. It's the awful shout that's going to haunt you for the next year.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know what? Since joining FD, I didn't have an awful shout until Vinicius decided to become a world-class player overnight.
We know there's one awful shout from you, and it's about the big man CR7.
Oh, right.
You
mean the greatest professional footballer
of all
time.
The second best player of all time, yeah.
No, you're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm saying Messi is probably the most gifted footballer ever. But Ronaldo is the greatest professional footballer that's ever played. He's the greatest professional.
This is a whole other podcast.
All right, we'll get into it. You know what?
We'll
schedule it in and we'll get into this next time, because that is, sadly, can you believe it, all we've got time for on the Extra Time podcast for this week. Zach, what else should our adoring fans go and watch after this?
Well, why not check out us on Snapchat? We post daily content on there, covering all sides of football. Make sure you've checked out the latest Sunday Vibes on Football Daily, where we spoke about injuries that could affect your club season. And on Eurofootball Daily, I'm not too sure what else is on Eurofootball Daily. I'll give the fans something right now, because, you know, the podcast channel. We will hopefully be shooting the podcast back in person very soon, and certain stat wars may be coming back to your screens.
You know, I was about to say your knowledge of our content is greater than your knowledge of the fixtures at the weekends, and I was quite impressed. But then you fell at the last hurdle when it got to the daily. Never mind. James, what are you streaming at the moment? What do you want, if people have got a loose end, what should they go do?
Oh, well, I say for Euro Football Daily, I'm, you know, my actual job. I'm just doing a what's the 10 I'm doing right now? I had it in my head and I've completely lost it now. It is the 10 best players, let's say, who are wasted on the bench. That's what I'm doing currently. And that'll be going out the day we're recording. I'm not too sure when this is going out. But yeah, we've got loads of stuff. I mean, if you're interested in football, this is the place to be.
Listen, love it. Check out James on Twitch as well. He's
always Man City there. Related watch-alongs. Yeah.
Oh, delightful. I'll be there. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening at home, whether it be on Spotify or whatever sort of form of media you're on at the moment. Make sure you're liked and subscribed to the Football Daily podcast channel. We absolutely love your support. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.